Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, and welcome to my Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. I have a great guest for you focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Diane Canada with Lady Up America. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Let's roll. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Diane Canada. But first, producer Steve, please play her clip.
Lady up around this house, lady up around this town. Victory on the battleground, we claim it now. Lady up around this house, lady up around this town. Victory on the battleground, we claim it now. Lady up around this house, lady up around this town. Victory on the battleground, we claim it now.
All right. Powerful stuff. Diane Canada was born in Lexington, Kentucky. Her professional experience includes working as an entrepreneurial business consultant and as a professional songwriter. Canada has served on the Mayor's Business Advisory Council, on the Political Advocate Committee for the Nashville Chapter of the National Association of Women Business Owners, and with BEST program Teaching Entrepreneur Skills in the Maximum Security Tennessee Prison for Women, and talking to us today from Cheatham, Tennessee. In 2020, she took on Bob Freeman, Democrat, in the general election for Tennessee House of Representatives, District 56, where only 3,400 votes out of 41,000 separated them. Freeman is up for re-election next week and running unopposed, I believe. Running for public office is purely an act of obedience, as God started stirring this call in me a few years ago. Looking back, I can see he has been preparing me for this entire life, both professionally and personally. After the loss of my brother nearly 5 years ago, who was a Marine in Fast Company Special Forces, one of my main focus points will be veterans' issues. This will include new issues around reducing veteran suicide and putting our special forces to work here at home to eradicate human trafficking. As a Republican, I am committed to upholding the Constitution as it was intended and not allowing it to be dismembered. As a Christian, I believe that God's principles must be the gauge on which our laws are based in order to prevent an anything-goes society. As a candidate, she listed personally passionate about reducing veteran suicide, a special forces task force to eradicate human trafficking, defending our Second Amendment, no red flag law, pro-life and pro-heartbeat bill with new ideas to make it easier for women to choose life, promoting entrepreneurship and further supporting small businesses with new ideas around support tools and resources. One more compass for society as intended by our founding fathers, where God remains in our courtrooms, schoolhouses, and homes, orderly immigration and against sanctuary cities, criminal justice reform. Now running Lady Up America from Ashland City, Tennessee, teaching savvy moms to influence the toughest political conversations of our lifetime. Mrs. Canada, how are you today?
Wow, Steve, you did your homework. I think you dug that up from the crypt, from the campaign trail, didn't you?
I try. I do my best.
Well, tell us how. Oh,
yes, absolutely. And you walk the walk. So tell us how your election for the State House District 56 went for you. What did you learn about Tennessee politics on that campaign?
Oh my gosh, I could write a whole book on that for sure. What I learned, a tremendous amount. I think what I saw was a personal, I had to do a personal heart check because I really didn't, I mean, politics was not on my radar at all my entire adult life. I mean, it just never crossed my mind to go vote in a primary. I didn't even know what a primary meant. I mean, I was so clueless. So I learned a ton. And I think this is where, also, I have to say, the Republican Party, I mean, there were a lot of great people in the General Assembly and a lot of great mentors that I had on the trail. But as a new candidate, if you are not a part of that establishment or you don't really have much experience in that world, you're really kind of on your own. as a candidate. So they expected me to kind of be left in the dust by my opponent. It was right as COVID was hitting in 2020. It was on the presidential election of 2020 is when I ran. And so COVID was just hitting. I had no, which meant I had no real ability to hold events and do fundraisers. And so I had to get really creative about how to get my name out there, which a lot of that entrepreneurial work that I'd done earlier in my life really came in handy for that. But they expected Bob to kind of leave me in the 17, 20% range. And I think I shocked myself and everybody, came in at 46%.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah.
Thank you.
So from your work with the Tennessee Women's Prisons, would you say the Tennessee prison system is in good shape? And what do you make of Constitutional Amendment number 3 on the ballot next week about slavery and indentured servitude? Do you agree with me that it's a no vote and a possible loophole for prisoners that don't want to work for money could get out early if a smart lawyer claimed they're slaves?
Yeah, there is so, like, don't even get me started on that topic, because we could probably spend the entire podcast on that. But I can tell you from being up close and personal in the prison, this will be my fourth year, and I'm about to start going in and teaching my fourth year with the BEST program there. Building Entrepreneurs for Success in Tennessee is the name of it. But I've seen it now from every angle, right? From the legislative side, from the teaching side, being in the prison, from the standpoint of those that are incarcerated, and then those who have now come out, and how they're doing now on the outside from having been a part of a rehabilitative program like that. And the other thing I saw that was so interesting is when I was running for office, whenever the legislators or the governor or anybody like that's going to come in and kind of make a visit to the prison, the cleaned up, spit shine polished version that they see is not the actual reality of what goes on in there. And again, having been a teacher in there for the last 4 years, I can attest that there are a lot of problems in our prison, a lot of problems. As a candidate too, running for office, even though I didn't win my particular seat, still a lot of people came to me even after the election begging for help in other prisons around Tennessee where there's just atrocities happening. So, but then I've spoken with the legislators and I kind of get their perspective too. So just trying to marinate on all the different angles and all of the different things that all the different perspectives. What I think, you know, it's kind of like when you're disciplining your kids, right? They're in a fight and you're trying to kind of get to the truth. Like, you know, this person has their version and that person has their version. You're trying to kind of get them in a room and kind of get to the truth. I think there are a lot of things we do well, but there's obviously a lot of room for reform. And I think giving any kind of a foothold for articles like what you're talking about, can be very far-reachingly devastating, you know, for our state.
Well, I know that before I arrived, Governor Lee was one of the first in the nation to make an effort to reduce the prison population. And then we have this now out of nowhere, it seems, constitutional amendment tucked away amongst three others, four total. Do we think that if it wins, it's going to be an improvement for the things that you're fighting for, or is it going to be a hindrance?
Are you talking about Governor Lee's ideas for criminal justice reform?
Well, that coupled with the Amendment 3 for the Constitution.
Oh, okay.
Are we going in the right direction?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So I think we need to squash that, personally. I really think we need to squash it. The thing about voting on, when these things kind of come to the ballot and we're looking at these things, there's so much to consider. Like, that's one thing I learned from running as a legislative candidate, is that when you try and fix one thing, or maybe something seems reasonable, you have to weigh all of the other things that you can break by fixing that one thing, or all of the other perspectives and things that have to be considered, strongly considered, before you put something into action. And this is what I think a lot of people don't understand who haven't run, is that, you know, there's just so many things to consider, and that has to be carefully thought out and weighed out. That's why government, I think, oftentimes moves at the rate of molasses, you know, but there's a reason for that, because there are a lot of things that have to be considered, and we can't be emotionally triggered. All of this racial tension and all of this that's going on right now around issues of slavery and all of that, we allow emotional triggers like that to drive our decisions at the ballot. That's very dangerous. Like, there were a lot of things that I was really personally passionate about, you know, even running on my platform, but I had to also sit down and think that through and say, okay, if this happens, it's like I always love that line, if this, then that. You know, like if this happens, what's going to happen? What's going to be the domino effect of that happening? And these are the things I think in our culture today, just as a rule, people don't, they just don't think about. All they think about is satisfying that acute emotional need or want that's driving them.
That's true. And we suffer from some low information voters out there. We have apathy. We have people that just don't have time to look into it and decide if slavery equals indentured servitude and what the unintended consequences of legislation like that. It's not their full-time job. And so of course, right, legislatures are able to sneak some stuff in there. Well, tell us what Lady Up America is and is doing to make our world a better place.
Well, one of the things, again, I saw on the campaign trail is that we as conservatives are really missing it in some areas. As a former entrepreneurial consultant, one of my roles was to go into ailing businesses that were kind of going down by the head, and again, sift through all of that emotion and figure out like what is the root of the problem, like what's really going on underneath the surface. And I think what's happened in our country is, I mean, at the end of the day, God has come out of the conversations around the kitchen table. He's come out of our schoolhouses. He's come out of our government houses. And the further we have gotten away from the values that our country was built on, which is Christianity, the further and further our country has backslidden. And, you know, I love that our founding fathers spent a lot of time really examining Americans to see if they were responsible enough to be self-governed. And there was, you may know about the first American Bible that was, you know, that was approved by Congress and sent out to every American as a kind of like a guidebook on how to self-govern. And so if God's way, if he is not the gauge between right and wrong, then who is? Then it's an anything goes. It's what's right for you. It's what's right for me. And we just have an unsustainable society. So with Lady Up America, what I'm doing there is I am bringing the Christianity values, the Christian values and the Christianity discussion back into the political discussion, because they can't be separated. Like politics and Christianity, what I've learned, they're not two separate things. They have to be interwoven, because if we can't trust Americans to make their own decisions and to live according to the values that our country was built on, then the bigger and bigger government has to get to regulate that. And the more and more room for corruption and all of that. So with Lady Up America, I am teaching women, I'm teaching moms specifically, how to have those very, very important discussions with their kids, their family members, their coworkers, whoever it might be, and bring that into the political realm that we're dealing with right now. Sorry for my dog.
That's okay. It happens here all the time. So I went onto your website and I saw a testimonial I thought was worth mentioning. It says, "I thank you so very much for hosting a much needed seminar! There were divine appointments for me all over the place. Thank you for being the courageous woman you are, Lulu E." This was a conference attendee. What divine appointments does Lulu mean?
Oh, well, actually, Lulu E, I'm glad you pulled that comment, because she had the confidence, she told me after leaving that event, to go and run for office. So she just ran as a Republican for State Executive Committee and won.
Oh,
so she is one of our most recent State Executive Committee members, and they are the regulating committee for the Republican Party here in Tennessee. So it was really great to see her take so much from that, to glean so much from that, and go on to run herself.
That's wonderful. Okay. Success story right there. Yeah. So about you, what female leaders inspired you, or do you admire the most?
Female leaders. Oh my goodness. The first person that came to my mind was Roma Downey, and she's not political, but in the entertainment world, she was on the show for many years, Touched by an Angel. And she's one that has gone on now to build a Christian production company. And so she and her husband make these great blockbuster films. I love her approach to people when we're talking about the Christian conversation, because it's a very gentle and soft approach, very, very effective, but very gentle and soft. And I think with Republicans, we come across so harsh, you know, because we're the tough love party and we are fearful and angry about the trajectory of our country right now, rightfully so. But we have to we have to learn how to tap into the compassion piece. And again, that's where I was going earlier, is that we as conservatives, we're missing that, you know, and I get that, I mean, a lot of us were raised in that tough love environment. We don't like to be coddling or anything like that. We don't want to appear to be coddling the other side or anything like that. But they are driven, the other side, the opposing side, is driven by emotion, whether we like that or not right now. They are driven by it. And rather than us trying to come in with a polar opposite approach, what we need to do is instead tap into the compassionate side, the things they care about, and help them in their evolution of those ideas. Help them ask what I call lingering questions, things that are going to help them arrive at their own aha moment. So I believe that transformation is internal. It's not something like, we're not going to say something or do something, whether we're talking about Christianity or politics. None of us have the ability to transform someone else's heart. That's God's job. But we can plant seeds, and we can be smart in our approach and how we drop those seeds. And to me, those seeds look like lingering questions that just kind of, you know, linger in their mind. They can't get it out of their mind. We're tapping into the things they care about, and we're inviting further discussion around those questions, rather than repelling them with a very tough love, harsh, we're looking down our nose at you, judgmental approach. And so,
yeah, more like jujitsu, not an equal and opposing force where you just rock 'em, sock 'em robots all day.
Yes,
and never get
yeah.
to a consensus. You know, Margaret Thatcher, Indira Gandhi, Golda Meir had a lot to do with killing communism, at least for the meantime. It's back now. But do you see any patriotic women like them on the scene today? Certainly, you know, globalist Angela Merkel, not on my list.
Any global women that are kind of coming with that approach? I don't. And I think this is where, when God was downloading a lot of this on my heart, Steve, I think this is one of the things that was frustrating me, is I was on the lookout, like I was seeking out these types of people, and I just couldn't find them. I can't find them. If they're out there, I don't know about them. And so I think this is why there's a void that maybe I can help fill in approaching things this way and teaching other women how to do it, because it's so needed in our society. Like, we have to, and women are, I will say this too, women of the species, no offense guys, but women of the species are the more emotionally intelligent. Like, we understand the emotional drive more than anyone, and nobody is more influential than a mom. So moms have so much influence over their children and over their communities, their husbands. My Nana always used to say that, you know, the man may be the head of the household, but the woman turns his neck, mm-hmm. you know, and it's so true. We have natural innate abilities to influence and to bring this softer approach to turning our culture back to God. But I think so many women don't know how to do it. They don't know how to approach these conversations. They just don't know how. And so I don't see, to answer your question, I don't see anybody else doing it that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
And I hope that this will be a movement that we can start and teach the moms, and they can kind of take this on as their own.
Well, when I compare, say, Hillary Clinton to, let's say, governor of South Dakota, Noem, mm-hmm. or Condoleezza Rice versus Madeleine Albright, rest her soul, or Tiffany Smiley versus Patty Murray running for U.S. Senate next week from Washington, or even Randy Weingarten versus Betsy DeVos, for example, mm-hmm. it seems to me the leaders of the left are very weak, powerful, but their leadership stinks, and their conservative opponents have these skills that you're talking about. How did you find your way to the Republican Party?
I've always been Republican my whole life, even before I realized all of the intricacies of politics. When I was in high school, I was on the rifle line, drill team line, and we actually got to go and perform for Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of giving away my age a little bit here, but
mine
but
too.
And Reagan, I heard him speak that day, and he just mesmerized me, which he had an ability to do on almost everyone who came into his sphere. But he just made so much sense to me. And then I went on as a songwriter. I got opportunities to perform for Newt Gingrich and for Bob Barr, who at the time was in Congress. And, you know, so I was around the Republican Party a lot. So I think just they probably helped form my early ideals before I even realized it. But more than anything, the Republican Party, the research I've done running, they are the most aligned with God's principles especially for the founding values of our country. The Democrat Party of today is not aligned at all with Christian values. I mean, there is nothing, just to be blunt, I mean, they could not be a further departure from Christian values.
And that's why we can't have a civil conversation anymore, except on this show. So thanks for coming on. And what do you think of the four women most ever, I think, on the Supreme Court now?
Oh my God. Well, we have, you know, obviously I love Amy Coney Barrett. I mean, I think she'll make a great addition to the Supreme Court. I know that they're talking about stacking the Supreme Court. I hope they don't do that. But the women that are there now, I mean, it's a good mix of people. I feel like, I mean, I haven't been following the Supreme Court cases as closely as I'd like to. I've followed a few of them, but from what I can see so far, I think it's a balanced court. Obviously, the leak and things like that concern me and concern a lot of people in America. So I don't know how secure it is anymore. And if they start stacking it, then that's going to be pretty devastating for our country. If they start making Puerto Rico and Washington states and things like that and electing more people, I mean, there's just so much that they can do that would be detrimental. But for right now, and I wanted to go back to what you were saying earlier about Kristi Noem and some of the governors and legislators that are in these states that kind of come with this more balanced approach. I mean, I think don't you think there's a real contrast between those people and the Republican side and the left side, the Democrat side. I mean, I think just the way they run their states, but also the way that they communicate, even if you look at Ron DeSantis in Florida, people like that, that come with a more measured and balanced approach. I think that's winning people in their states, especially when they see that contrast of how far the left has gone away from those values. The more measured and balanced that we can stay in our demeanor, in our presentation, the better. Because what I observed, what happened leading up to this was they have won our younger people and a lot of the people who maybe have switched parties or a lot of those moderate Democrats, they have won them with this, we care about you and those nasty old Republicans don't.
Right.
You know, it's been this kind of what I call sympathetic messaging that has won them. So then when we come in pointing our fingers and with our tough love approach and all that, we look unhinged, right? We look like the crazy ones. Yeah. So getting that under control and maintaining that balanced demeanor. And again, all the things that God talks about in the Bible and in Galatians about walking out the fruit of the Spirit, that's how they won them. And so we have to tap into those in a more genuine way, tap into those tactics to win them back.
They definitely play on the fear and the emotion, where on the right, it is more level-headed, more leadership mm-hmm. skills. You know, DeSantis was in the military, and so he knows the difference between life and death and how to follow a good leader. You know, the theme of this podcast since the beginning in the Washington days is, what is a Republican? You know, beyond the platform, you know, real conservative values. Marsha Blackburn, our U.S. Mm-hmm. senator, seems like a Tennessee values kind of lady, an America First type of lady. What would you advise her if she was your client?
She is so great. I mean, there's things I can learn from Marsha, so I would hate to be on the side of trying to school her on anything. But what I think, if you've read her book, she just put out a book, I think it's called The Mindset of a Conservative Woman, something like that. And it's a really, really great book. So a lot of the things that I talk about are things she's already doing in a lot of ways. But I think with Marsha, a lot of people see her as kind of the Barbie doll country club Republican. And I think that's how a lot of people view Republicans, is they're kind of stuck in their country clubs and they are out of touch with the average working person. Some of that's changing. I think our branding and our party is changing. But I would love to see people like Marsha and a lot of our other legislators more boots on the ground in the community, you know, just more rather than going from event to event and what I call the pep rally, you know, events. I would rather see them actually in the community, you know, reaching into the hearts and minds of the everyday person. And I'm not going
to
say she doesn't
do that retail politics. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So on the far other extreme, then, you know, we have this thing called Rep. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and it came to the defense of fellow congressional freshman Rep. Ilhan Omar on social media as the House was preparing to vote on a resolution condemning anti-Semitism. in response to comments Omar made about Israel. A bunch of tweets, the New York Democrat accused lawmakers criticizing Omar of employing an inconsistent standard in their condemnation of bigotry. Omar from Minnesota has been accused by members of both parties of using anti-Semitic tropes in her critiques of U.S. policy in the Middle East. She said, it's not my position to tell people how to feel or that their hurt is invalid, Ocasio-Cortez tweeted. But incidents like these do beg the question, where are the resolutions against homophobic statements, for anti-Blackness, for xenophobia? That sounds divisive. You were talking exactly against that, about how she was a divisive, but then saying it's hurt feelings. How would you advise her if she was a client?
AOC?
Yeah, to get more in line with what could be successful with your Lady Up America protocols, let's call them. She's obviously needs a lot of help to get to somewhere in the middle, to be compromising, to be somebody to negotiate with if she thinks like that. How would you advise her if she was just someone off the street and not actually AOC?
Okay, yeah, I see where you're going with this now. Yeah, so kind of backing up to Marsha and maybe looking at AOC and other legislators on either side of the aisle, my approach in Lady Up America is the same no matter what side of the aisle we're on. And I basically break it down into three steps, where the first one is we've got to do our own internal housekeeping, right? We've got to make sure that we are walking out the fruit of the Spirit, that we are, if we are not walking out what we are trying to teach or what we're trying to legislate, then we have no influence, in my opinion. So we don't have the right to be able to be in those seats, I don't think, if we haven't done a good internal housekeeping first, and we make sure that we are balanced and we are walking that out and our foundation is strong and all of that. So I think that's the first place we have to start. Then we move into my second piece, which is what I call entertaining. And that is just leaning in to understand where the other person is coming from, entertaining their view of the world and asking questions. Like, a lot of times I just think we need to change the question, Steve, you know, so a lot of it is just leaning in and saying, okay, reserving your opinion, reserving your judgment, just leaning in to understand. Speaking to understand, not speaking to talk, but speaking to understand. So we lean in and we ask questions like, I can see that you're really passionate about this. Help me see it through your eyes. Help me understand where you're coming from. How did you arrive at that view of the world? Help me see it through your eyes. That's our second step. And then once we've really listened and we have opportunities for that common ground to bubble up, we can say, oh, okay, well, I can understand now why you think that way, or I can understand, you know, where you're coming from. I mean, just the atmosphere changes when we lean in to understand. Then we can move to the third piece in Lady Up America, which is the gardening piece. And that's what I was talking about earlier, where we become kind of like a modern day Yoda, where we're gently guiding people to see things for themselves. Because I can tell you all day long that that sky out there is blue, but if you're looking out there and you see it as yellow, no amount of talking that I can do is going to convince you that it's blue. You've got to see it for yourself. And so this is where the transformation has to be internal. We are not responsible for that transformation. God is, but we can plant the seeds and we can show up and present in such a way where people actually want to hear what we have to say. And it's not that hard. I will tell you, a lot of people will be very condescending with me and they'll be like, oh, good luck with that, Diane. You know, well, I've spent entire days in rooms with Democrats, with people with very opposing views to mine. And I've tested these concepts out for a whole year. I've done this and it always works every time. So it doesn't matter how far apart we are on issue. A lot of it is how we show up. That first piece of housekeeping, are we showing up with judgment and all of that in our hearts and in our minds? Or are we showing up with a genuine, we're walking out the fruit of the Spirit and we genuinely want to understand? And then that's, are we great, asking the right questions? And then our influence comes from gardening, meaning planting very strategic seeds. Those are lingering questions. And you're not trying to answer the question in the moment, right? You drop this great lingering question on them. The idea is not to debate it. It's just to drop it and then walk out of the room. Like, Elvis has left the building, like, walk away. So it looks like this in real life. So let's say we're talking to AOC about socialized healthcare. Let's just bring that up. I bring this one up a lot. So I'm having a discussion with her, and I've already worked out my number one step, right? So I'm coming from a place of peace and all of that. I'm leaning in, I'm saying, you know, help me understand where you're coming from. You obviously are very bought in to this socialized medicine idea. Help me understand. So she explains it to me. Okay. Then I can then come with my gardening piece and say, okay, here's where I get lost. We all want everybody to be okay in America. Alexandra, don't we? We all want everybody to be okay. Nobody wants to see anyone suffer. In Marxist and socialist countries, once a person reaches a certain age, like 75, maybe younger, and they are no longer seen as contributors to a society, then the government kind of sees them as disposable. So if they call an ambulance because they're having a heart attack, that ambulance ain't coming. And it just breaks my heart to think of somebody needing care and the ambulance isn't coming. So we're not going to settle all this tonight, Alexander. We're so far apart on our politics, and I get that. But my question that I just want to leave you with, and we can talk about it next time I see you, my question to you would be, who do you think will be disposable in America when we go socialist? It's just a question. It's good to see you. I'll see you at the game next week. And you exit.
Wow. If DC operated like that, we'd be in a whole different state of mind, wouldn't we? Did you find Republicans in Nashville receptive to that message compared to the rest of the red state of ours?
The Republican women were extremely receptive. I've spoken for many, many, many Republican women's groups. I just finished a tour speaking in battleground counties. I was for 2 months out on tour speaking in GOP rooms and with Republican women. The ones who are resistant are the men. Typically, the Republican men they're the condescending ones that'll say, good luck with that, Diane. You know, it's not reality. It's not going to work. But again, I come back to the moms get it. The moms understand influence. They understand emotional intelligence. They can get their kid, their lazy kid, to get up and clean that room if they use the right tactic, right? And they can, they know.
Do you think the Republican Party is up for female leadership? I want to just read
Absolutely.
Something real quick. A headline in the Washington Examiner, Year of the Latina Republican, Congress poised to make history with 90 Hispanic candidates on the ballot. By the way, that's a 26-point shift since August because of crime to female Hispanic Republicans running for office. And I can go down the whole list, but I won't do it. You know, how did the power brokers in the town on the Republican side, which is most of them here, take on your campaign? And did you get support from the powers that be?
On my campaign trail or on Lady Up America?
All of the above. Like, I'm just wondering if the Republican Party of this state, which is probably the reddest of the states, maybe Oklahoma is a close second, would take to the idea of this red wave of Latina Republicans, or just Republican women's, forget the Latina part, coming into power. Are they going to be okay with that? Are they going to get on board?
Yeah, I think they are. And the legislators that I know are very, I mean, a lot of people still think that it's a good old boy club here in Tennessee. But from what I've observed, they do get behind the women, you know, the women that they feel like can win, the women they feel like have a voice and can win. It's so funny, like when my campaign ended, my phone blew up from a lot of them, you know, a lot of the legislators and people in other, you know, offices, you know, appointed offices here in town. They all blew my phone up and they said, we're so sorry. We should have come beside you more. We, you know, if you want to run again, we'll get our checkbooks out. We'll make sure you win. You know, so I think they just want a viable candidate. I don't think it's so much male or female anymore. I think they just want a viable candidate that can lead. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about this though, real quick, Steve. When I was on tour, my Lady Up America tour, I went from August to October. I actually had not planned on going to Miami-Dade on my tour. And at one of my stops, a woman had put me in touch with a childhood friend of hers and asked me if I would call her when I was down near Miami. Well, I did. And she shared with me her story. She was a Cuban. Her family were Cuban immigrants. They were part of that Mariel boat lift. You remember in the 80s, very famous boat lift.
Castro's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was Castro over 100,000 at Yeah, I think it was say like 100,000 of them fled, you know, from Cuba during that time. Well, her parents, she and her sisters, they fled here. and they were given asylum. They are so, I mean, she was sharing with me how the friend that had put me in touch with her, their fathers were both political prisoners in Cuba. And so when I heard the whole story, of course, I was very intrigued. And then she asked me a lot about what I was doing on the tour. She specifically asked if I would come to Miami. And she asked me to add that stop to my tour. And she gathered a room full of women who were not only from Cuba, but also Venezuela. It turned out to be Iriana Villanova, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. She ran for Congress in Miami, in Miami, and Trump backed her. She had been a Democrat before, I think it was in 2016, I guess it was. She had voted Democrat, and then in 2020, I believe is when she was running. I want to make sure I have my dates right on that, so I'm just pulling that from memory. But it hasn't been that long ago. She may have been 2018 that she ran, and Trump backed her. And anyway, she asked after the event was over if I could come back and speak to a whole lot more of them. The Cuban and the Venezuelan, the Latino women are stepping up like I've never seen,
Yeah, I
and
mean,
they are
in
so
Florida
driven.
also is the case of Anna Paulina Luna. She lost in 2020,
Yes.
53-47, but trying again next week. We wish her luck.
Yes, we do.
And I also wanted to mention, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, they're prominent MAGA, and now with Paula Luna, if she gets in there from Florida, and the Hispanic Maya Flores from Texas is giving the left all
Yes.
kinds of
She
fits.
sure is. She's strong.
Yeah. So, what do you make of the MAGA Republican female umbrella growing?
I love it. I love seeing it. I mean, it's an America First policy. Nobody appreciates freedom like someone who knows what it's like to live without it. I think they're very driven. I mean, if we talk about the Latino women is what I'm talking about. Obviously all of the women that are stepping up to run. I mean, I loved seeing the female takeover we had in the House the last time around, and I'd love to see a repeat of that this time. I'd love to see more and more and more women stepping up. But I also see veterans stepping up now. I see so many people that you would have never thought would run for politics now stepping up because they love our country. And
Yeah.
these Latino women, they understand the danger. Like they have cried in front of me, and they are so emotional about how painful it is to watch our country disintegrating into the very tyranny that they ran from.
Well, here's what
So,
Kevin McCarthy said in 2020, the same year we were talking about the guy everyone expects will be speaker after next week. He said, unsurprisingly, the media was wrong again. While they were very busy promoting the Democrats' narrative that all members of the GOP look and think the same way, they missed the facts. The Republican Party was actually expanding under President Trump's watch. Come January 2021, we will be welcoming a record number of Republican women to the halls of Congress. They will be bringing their experiences as veterans, small business owners, immigrants, and previously elected officials to the Republican conference. They will be contributing invaluable perspectives and ideas based on their long list of respective achievements, and that is why they were elected. Unlike the Democrats, who are preoccupied with identity politics, Republicans were and continue to be focused on identifying the strongest voices and ideas possible. Those that are laser focused on keeping your family safe and your money in your pocket. This philosophy, that solid, original thinking, qualifies you for a seat at the table in the GOP. We will allow our party to continue to grow bigger, stronger, and smarter than ever before, and we're just getting started. Do you get the sense he's right?
I do because it's policy driven. It's not about identity politics. It's what I was kind of saying earlier. They just want candidates and elected officials who can lead, and one of the things I talk about in Lady Up America a lot, especially when I speak, is the seven, what I call load-bearing walls of our country. And so many Americans are unaware of these. They precede the Constitution. They were a part of the Founding Fathers study group, if you will, of trying to see if we could handle being a republic. Because when you're a republic, there's a lot of personal responsibility that comes with that, right? And we definitely during these last couple of years, during this pandemic, we have woken up to how asleep we have been, at all through all of this, through the last several decades of them kind of moving in and encroaching.
Yeah.
But these seven founding values, I just would like to list them if we have a minute for me to do that,
Yeah,
Steve.
we got about 3 more minutes and I got a few more questions, so go for it.
Okay. Yeah. So this is, I think, what what people are gravitating toward is the founding values of our country. It's not about trying to return to something antiquated. Instead, what I try to do is teach them how to explain it. Like, you're an HGTV fan. We talk about the load-bearing walls in a house. If one of those comes down, then the whole roof caves in. Well, that's what these seven values are. They are human dignity, meaning God gives us our dignity, not government. Individual freedom. We have the right to move about the cabin, right? We don't need to be told. Rule of law. What's good for the goose should be good for the gander, right? Limited government. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, the bigger the government gets, the less free you are. Fiscal responsibility means you better be good with the budget. You know, you need to make sure that you're dependable. There's no such thing as tax, no such thing as government funded anything. It's all our money and they're supposed to be good stewards of it. Free markets is number six. And I always describe it this way. When you walk into a produce section in New York in the middle of the winter, and you've actually got choices, you know, you've got oranges and apples and all these things that you can pick from. That's a result of free markets. Under socialism, the shelves are bare, like they are after a snowstorm. Peace through strength is the seventh one. How do you stop a bully on the playground? By a force greater than himself. And these are the seven that uphold our republic. And so this is what I think everybody's gravitating back to, are these basics. You know, the government's number one job is to keep us safe, not only as a country, but in our neighborhoods and all of that. So when we look at rule of law and peace through strength, whatever the news topic du jour is, it is rooted back in one of these seven. If we're talking about the border crisis, we're talking about cashless bail, whatever it is, they're rooted back in one of these seven. And this is what we've got to get back to. They're nonpartisan, you know, but they are the load-bearing walls of our country.
I learned recently that the school boards, where a lot of mama bears became activated these last few years, actually have no power. The federal government attached a lot of strings to Fed funds for school bailouts during lockdown and COVID. How do you feel about the real war on women with Title IX, women's sports for biological males, and gay education and curriculums, even in Catholic and Christian schools?
Oh my gosh, it makes me sick. I mean, it just makes me sick. Here's the thing, though. We do still have power. And you're right, those schools are moving in those directions because of the federal funds. I don't know. I would like for everyone who's listening today to pick up Kimberly L's book, ELLS. Her book is called The Invincible Family. And she did so much research around this. She's been a conservative writer for many, many great publications for years. And she's a mom, I think, of five children. But she spent time at the UN. And she learned when she came across a sentence one day in something she was reading about how children should have sexual rights. And that obviously raised her eyebrow. And she's like, what are they talking about? So she went on a deep dive digging for this. And she came up with this great book. But it talks about how at the UN level, which Planned Parenthood has a very big seat at, there is a 100% clear agenda from that level to trickle all of this curriculum down into the schools. And there's a very real reason behind why they're doing it. I could understand the racial division to a degree, but I couldn't understand the over-sexualization, the focus on the transgender movement, this focus on Title IX. Like, I just couldn't understand what the end game was, like what they were getting at. Her book explains it perfectly. But there's only a few layers between the UN and our schools. And I don't want to try to paraphrase it because there's a lot to it, but it's brilliant the way she laid it out. But how I feel about it is, I mean, obviously, I don't believe that biological boys should be competing in men's sports. That's like just common sense to me.
Women's sports, yeah.
That's a completely unfair. Yeah,
so I have time for one more. Let's see how we can get it in if we can. So bottom line, can American women affect change without becoming full-blown activists like the left pumps out of colleges?
Yeah, 100%. And that's what Lady Up America is all about. Most women, especially moms, they don't want to become activists. And so what I'm teaching them is that they don't have to go out and try to be some big world changer. They can change the world around them starting today with this app that I've created. And that will ripple out. And it will change our world. It will plant seeds and it will change our world. But the church and the family, we have got to start stepping up as moms and putting these values back into the minds and the hearts of our kids. That's where it's going to start. And learning how to have the toughest political conversations of our lifetime with the people we encounter every day, winning them back to our values.
All right. A republic, if you can keep it. Well, Diane, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. We're nearing the end here. So please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, Lady Up, and follow you.
Thanks for having me today too, Stephen. Really appreciate that. Yes, ladyupamerica.com. That's Lady Up like man up, but ladyupamerica.com. And I want to encourage anyone, they can go to their app store, their Google or their Apple store, and download the Lady Up America app. And that's the fastest way to get engaged.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on with us. Hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Oh, and one last thing. Do you have future ambitions? Are you going to run again?
We moved to a different county. We've got great leadership here in the county I'm in. So no reason to run right now. But if God puts that call on my heart again, I would. I certainly would. Right now, I think the work I'm doing in Lady Up America can be way more effective. So we'll see. But I'm always open to God's change in my plans.
Great. Well, God bless you and good luck. And thanks again.
Thank you.
This pawn shop ticket for this week's rent. Well, last week's check.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on our minds. Steve, what did you think of Diane Canada?
Well, I think Diane is just doing a wonderful job. And Steve, you're getting some stellar guests on here.
Thank you.
She is accomplishing things. She's going out and she's giving classes and she's empowering people. And the track record is proving itself to be that she's doing an amazing job. And I think because she was on the job, did her real job on the job training by running for a position, even though she failed in that position of getting nominated, she is now taking all that knowledge and she's helping other people to go through the same process and shortcut it for them. And I love what she was saying about and I wrote some notes down for myself, but just the three-pronged approach of going in there in a state of peace and then ask probing questions and then leave a probing question behind. I love that. Yeah. I do that on a personal basis when I'm discussing things with people that don't agree with me, but I like it when we are talking about moving forward with on a political realm.
That's right. And if we're going to have a Hispanic women's Catholic-based rise of leadership in the Republican Party, then her brand of Republicanism, I think, is going to be very well received, and it's going to help this country in ways that are unfathomable at this time. But boy, compared to a Nancy Pelosi, like her daughter said, she'll cut your head off before you know you're bleeding, or an AOC and the squad and all of their defund the police craziness and, you know, billions of dollars of damage in the name of solidarity or whatever the case may be, I'd be happy to turn the page on that and get more of what Diane is cooking, as The Rock said. So, but I want to talk about something else. In a 1923 pamphlet titled The Doctrine of Fascism, Benito Mussolini, heard of him, wrote, "If classical liberalism spells individualism, fascism spells government, but not a government of by and for we the people. Instead, it would be a government of, by, and for the most powerful corporate interests in the nation." 15 years later, in 1938, Mussolini brought his vision of fascism into full reality when he dissolved parliament and replaced it with the Chamber of the Fascist Corporations. This is legit. I'm not making this up. Corporations were still privately owned. You could buy them on the stock market. But now, instead of having to sneak their money to folks like Nancy Pelosi and covertly write legislation, they were openly in charge of the government. Here's a headline in FoxNews.com from today. DOJ's election plan raises threat of selective enforcement against red states, watchdog warns. The Justice Department this week outlined the steps it will take on Election Day next week to ensure a fair election process. But a government watchdog is warning that the plan leaves out critical details that open the door to selective enforcement against red states. Steve, would you please play the clip?
If something is reported to us as potentially misinformation, important misinformation. We also have this third-party fact-checking program because we don't want to be deciding what's true and false. And for the, I think it was 5 or 7 days when it was basically being being determined whether it was false, the distribution on Facebook was decreased, but people were still allowed to share it. So you could still share it. You could still consume it.
So when you say the distribution is decreased,
it got shared.
How does that work?
It basically, the ranking in newsfeed was a little bit less.
So the Foundation for Government Accountability said the lack of detail in the DOJ's announcement likely means selective transparency and selective enforcement, something we've come to expect from the Biden administration's two-tiered approach to justice. So what we just heard was an oligarch, or Jeff, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, who runs Facebook, which was a trillion-dollar company, not anymore, but it was, talking to Joe Rogan. Okay, thank you. That's the most popular podcast out there. But the Justice Department released a summary of its comprehensive Election Day plan and said it is aiming at ensuring that all qualified voters have the opportunity to cast their ballot and have their votes counted free of discrimination, intimidation, or fraud in the election process. Sounds good, but consistent with longstanding Justice Department practices and procedures, civil rights, criminal, and national divisions will spearhead the effort. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on all this stuff, but today in The Intercept, which is actually a left-wing or let's just say left of center website that was founded by a left voting individual named Greenwald. He wrote a piece that's very important, and it was written called Truth Cops: Leaked Documents Outlined DHS's, that's Department of Homeland Security's, plan to police disinformation. In it, it says prior to the 2020 election, tech companies, including Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Discord, Wikipedia, Microsoft, LinkedIn, and Verizon Media, met on a monthly basis with the FBI, CISA, and other government representatives, according to NBC News. The meetings were part of an initiative still ongoing between the private sector and government. What did I just say about private sector and government becoming one? To discuss how firms would handle misinformation during the elections. Okay, well, last thing I want to say, and Steve, I want to hear what you have to say about this, is Politico. Politico is obviously a left-wing website. They have their political bent in the Democratic Party. Here is what they said. Former Republican President Donald Trump has so far remained silent online about the Pelosi home invasion, but his son, Donald Trump Jr., retweeted a proposed Paul Pelosi Halloween costume featuring men's underwear and a hammer, saying the internet remains undefeated. Rep. Clay Higgins, Republican Louisiana, who sits on the House Homeland Security Committee, embraced a false anti-LGBT conspiracy surrounding the attack, tweeting and then deleting a post suggesting the predator was a male. Okay. Based on unfounded and false claims, among those baseless claims that a third person answered the door when police arrived at the Pelosi home, which San Francisco law enforcement has said is untrue, and that DePepe, who's the alleged intruder, was in his underwear when apprehended, a falsehood taken from a since corrected local news report. Okay, the problem here is, of course, as even Politico pointed out, it was KTVU, not Republicans, who first ran the underwear story, information they have since retracted. And as far as the third person allegedly answering the door, that story came from Politico themselves the day before and was published after the San Francisco Police Department held a presser led by Police Chief Bill Scott. Okay, so point being, corporations are in bed with the government, and that's defined by a fascist as fascism. Fact checkers can't even keep their own story straight when they're fact checking themselves the next day on a conspiracy theory as conspiracy theorists. Steve, how does a democracy or a republic function with all of this crap going on?
Very difficult. And the fact is, when you start going down this rabbit trail, which I did when I was putting together my book, is that they create a site and they start promoting their own information that gets promoted to another site, to another site, to another site, to another site, to the point it gets picked up. It all got created. And by the way, all the tech giants all have close ties to CIA money, investments, and other government entities who actually invested into these companies at the very, very beginning. Because if you want to spy on people, there's no better way to do it than having them volunteer their own information under just sharing with all their friends.
That's right. So tune in here and we won't go that route for you. And stay tuned for my thought of the week.
I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I listen to that too long and I mess up. Sorry about that. Okay, welcome to my thought of the week, our thought of the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the Mill Creek View podcast. I have to keep telling you, keep subscribing. It's okay. Please do it. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere really now and hit the subscribe button. Thanks for doing it. Disciplining yourself to do what you know is right and important, although difficult, is the high road to pride, self-esteem, and personal satisfaction. I love argument. I love debate. I don't expect anyone just to sit there and agree with me. That's not their job. When people are free to choose, they choose freedom. The Iron Lady could simply not be moved. With a very strong set of principles, Margaret Thatcher was the first female prime minister of the United Kingdom. Thatcher got her nickname after accusing the Soviet Union of being bent on world domination and giving a fearless anti-communism speech back in 1976. Thatcher believed in a free market and free capitalism. During her three terms, she faced a military challenge that became known as the Falklands War, reduced trade union power, cut social welfare programs, and privatized some state-owned companies. While trying to implement a fixed-rate local tax, the Iron Lady's popularity decreased, and in 1990, she announced her resignations. Due to her leadership style, amazing determination, actions, and policies, Thatcher is considered one of the most famous politicians in British history. I'll tell you right now, if we are going to save the Republic, it won't be Mitch McConnell. Give a lady a chance. Well, that's it for this episode. Really hope you liked it. Write to me at millcreekview@yahoo.com. I just might read it in the air. Thank you, Diane Canada. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the millcreekviewonline.com. Peace in our time.
Children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like